Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Tennis. I'm your host, Bill Patton. What is Infinite Tennis? It's inspirational, uplifting discussion about doing what you want and doing it to the best of your abilities. It's about having a plan and executing your plan. It's about starting now. Infinite Tennis' goal is that there will be 10 American players ranked in the top 100 by the end of 2014, and each of you will do a little something to help that happen. Where to start? Find the youngster that says, I want to be a pro tennis player, and shows the right effort. Feed the dream. Support the kid. Okay, time for me to settle down, because on the show today is the guy that does the heavy lifting. Wayne Bryan is the foremost ambassador for tennis in America, and for my money, he is my leader for player development. He's an author, a much sought-after speaker. Multiple times he has been World Team Tennis Coach of the Year. And many people know him as the father of the Bryan brothers, the greatest doubles team in the history of the game. Today we're going to discuss Wayne's book, take a few questions that were gathered throughout the week, and right now we're going to take a break to get a quote from Plato, who said, music gives a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, a charm to sadness, gaiety and life to everything. It is the essence of order and leads us to all that is God, just and beautiful, and of which is the invisible but nevertheless dazzling, passionate, and eternal form. My hope is that this show is so great that you will feel compelled to share it with your players, parents, fellow coaches. We're going to go to a commercial, and we're going to come back with Wayne Bryan.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Hi, Wayne. How are you?
Bill, how you doing? I love that reference to music. I'm a huge music fan. I play music. I play all the instruments. I was at a Sheryl Crow concert last night at the beautiful Santa Barbara Bowl. And here's my quotes on music. Without music, the world would be a mistake. That's Nietzsche. Beethoven, one of the greatest composers of all time, said, music is a higher revelation than all wisdom and philosophy. The great country rocker Keith Urban said, and I think this is the best of all, music expresses the inexpressible. Wayne Bryan says, music is fun, it's social, it's creative, and it's good for the soul. What a great way to start the show. I love music and what it can do for people.
You know, it's funny because I'm glad you said that, because the reason I picked that theme song is because it talks about friendship, and that's a really strong theme on the show here. So that's something I like to get out right at the beginning and get people primed on.
Well, I think music, like tennis, brings people together, and that's what I think I love most about both of those things, is how it helps people connect.
Okay, terrific. So here's the plan for today. I'm going to ask you a little bit about player responsibility, then we're going to go through your book, and then I have some questions that are going to be sprinkled in there from people that gave those questions to me throughout the week. Some tough problems for Coach Wayne to figure out. So let me start with this. I was interviewing Joel Drucker, who I think is a pretty smart guy. And
I saw Joel in New York last week. He's a great guy. He's a brilliant guy, great writer. Really like Joel.
So Joel's assertion is that coaches don't develop players, parents don't develop players, it's the players who develop themselves. So let's talk a little bit about the player taking responsibility for how it goes.
Well, I got to disagree slightly with my pal Joel. I think there's a lot that goes in to developing a player. Certainly the player is the prime mover unmoved. He's the guy hitting the balls. But doggone it, that parent is awfully important in so many ways. And, of course, great coach or coaches are great. I think the governing body can be great. The local club can be great, the park, the school, because, after all, they supply programming. I'm a big believer in programming really drives the sport. Mike and Bob got started in a parent-child tournament at our club when they were 5 years old. They went and played Lake Lindero at age six. That was set up by the Ventura County Junior Tennis Association. They quickly went and played Southern California tournaments. They played junior team tennis. So the programming drives the tennis. Just like in music, you don't want to sit in your back room and play piano all day. You want to go perform at your kindergarten or in a talent show or play for your grandmother. Programming and performance is important for tennis and music. But I think there's an old expression, it takes a village to raise a child. Hillary Clinton used that expression, but she didn't coin it. I certainly believe there's a lot of factors that help a child become a player. They're all very important, but I certainly understand what Joel's saying, that the player has to have the passion, the motivation, and they're the ones that are out there hitting the balls in the sun to improve and to try to win. I think it's all things that go into the stew of making a player. You leave out one, you're diminishing your chances for sure.
Okay, so let's move on. That's great. I appreciate that. Now, let's talk about your book. And for those of you who are tuning in here today, what we're going to do is we're going to run through Wayne's book, and then you're going to be compelled to want to get it. I have it right here in my hand. And one thing that I love about it is it's a bunch of little short chapters. So you can read a chapter in 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, something like that. So,
well, I'm a simple guy, and I think people are busy these days. I didn't want to make it a heavy tome and a big philosophical or massively educational book. I think it's a book that you can pick up and read anytime. You can pull out any old chapter. A lot of parents carry it with them at all times, and I think it's the kind of book that you want to sort of read and reread. But and there's even cartoons in there and a lot of stories. I think it's light and breezy.
That's I like the pictures. So you autographed mine, and it said, for Bill, stroke synthesis. Wayne. Okay. So now, why? And we're going to try to keep Wayne to one-minute answers. This would be a gargantuan feat if I can do
it's
this.
Impossible. Right. It's impossible.
Why should I? Chapter one. Why should I raise a champion?
Well, I think that sort of gets to the essence, you know, of my philosophy. I think every child should strive for greatness. They should find their passion. That's what gets you out of bed every day. If you have a passion at school, that gets you to school each day. When we eliminate music in the school or athletics in the school, I think the kids are less prone to go to school. You've got to find something that really gets you going and gets that heartbeat and gets you fired up for life. Those that are in gangs in the inner city, sad to say, they don't have a passion. They don't make good grades in school. They don't play sports. They don't play dance. They don't dance. They don't have athletics. And those that do are not attracted to monkey business or being in a gang. If you have a passion, that gets you fired up. And it also, at the same time, the great disciplines of life, like tennis or golf or dance or theater or music, it teaches you the great lessons of life. It teaches you about striving and discipline and goal setting and battling back from losses. It teaches you how to win with humility. So many great life lessons are in the classic disciplines. I'm not a fan of video games. I'm not a fan of TV for young people. It wastes their life. I think after a discipline, give it all you got, and you're going to enjoy life more, and you're going to be a better human being. I've got ways to do that, but I definitely think every child should have a passion, and they should strive to greatness in something.
Okay, great. So, you know, it's funny. It's not funny. I shouldn't say funny. It's interesting that I believe that kids get attracted to gangs because they find a passion that their family failed to deliver. So that's I think that's the attraction for that. There's passion in that pursuit of selling the drugs and shooting people, which is awful. Right,
there's a void in their life, and they go to the lowest common denominator. I think
exactly.
I agree with that.
When do I start to raise a champion? This should take 30 seconds.
Immediately, the day they're born, you know, you're always holding that little challenge out there in front of them. I'm blessed with a fantastically great, cute, dynamic, enthusiastic, crazy little granddaughter named Michaela. And we're always putting that little challenge out in front of her, and she loves it, be it hitting a balloon with a racket or rolling it across the floor or seeing how far she can walk or getting that microphone in her hand and doing a little singing with, and she can't even talk yet. She can bang on that piano. She can hit those drums. Always that little challenge out in front. But you don't walk in the gate if you want them to be a tennis player at age 10. That's too late. You've got to be doing things that 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Children can learn 4 languages by the time they're 6. They can do all kind of great things in music and athletics early on. You make it fun, and you break it down into its component parts. You're not out there cracking balls on a full court at age 3, but you can certainly have that racket, a small racket in your hand, pushing that ball around, bouncing it in the backyard, doing all kind of little tiny skills. Same with basketball. You don't go out on a court at 10. You're shooting hoops on a small a bucket in your backyard at 3, 4, 5. You're shooting in the driveway. If you want to be a rodeo star, you don't get on the horse at 10. You're on that little pony at 3 years old. I'm a big believer in an early start. Early starts lead to greatness. Mozart, for crying out loud, was playing concert halls throughout Europe when he was 6 years old. That means he didn't start at 6. He'd been playing that piano since he was 1 year old. Early start is crucial, but make it fun along the way.
That's chapter
3. No drudgery at any time.
So expand a little bit more on the different ways to make it fun.
Oh, there's just innumerable ways. It's up to the parents' creativity. It's up to the coach's creativity. What I say is always look at the children's eyes. Look, I've been in a band for over 35 years. I'm always on stage performing, either with my band or with a mic in my hand, emceeing an event. You always look at your audience, and if you have only one person in your audience, and that's your own child, is there a sparkle in their eye? Is there a smile on their face? Is there a squeal? Is there a laugh? Are they doing it with enthusiasm? If they are, what you're doing is fun. It's got to be fun for you, and it's got to be fun for the kid. If you're both having fun, you're going to acquire skills, and you're going to go forward, and you're going to enjoy it even more. But always look in your child's eyes, or if you're a coach, look in your student's eyes. If you're a band, look in your audience's eyes. I saw Sheryl Crow, like I say, at the Santa Barbara Bowl last night. She had that crowd just rocking and eating out of her hands. She didn't need to look in their faces. She could hear it because they were all singing her lyrics and clapping along and dancing in the audience. Always be aware of how you're going over. I do a lot of speaking. If I'm not going over, if I'm looking out at the audience and they have a dead expression, then I'm not doing the job. I'm not rocking them enough. I'm not entertaining enough. I'm not giving them enough information. I'm going to change what I'm doing till I get that room alive and on fire.
Okay, so what happens? Now, some people culturally don't really value the fun. They, you know, there's some cultures where it's all about the duty and the respect and the honor and all that stuff. What do you say to those people that are like, Wayne, okay, whatever, you don't understand my culture? And then part two of that is, what do you do when the fun stops? Where do you go from there?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you can raise a champion with boredom. You can raise a champion with force and coercion and abuse. I have seen it. I know players that are literally on the tour, and they've reached an incredibly high level that have been taught and brought up in an abusive way, and it breaks your heart. And quite often a 21-year-old will get a restraining order against that mom or that dad or that coach who brought them along in an abusive way. Yes, you can raise a champion with boredom and tedium and, like I say, abusive approach. That's not for me, and that's not for the best for the child. I want
right.
the children to not only become a good player or a good dancer or a good speaker or a good rodeo star, but I want them to be better people and have a great relationship with their parent or their mentor or their coach. How terrible to reach the top of the mountain and then hate your parent. That's not what I'm at. I want to have... I see these great disciplines, sport, music, and the arts, as a chance to enhance your relationship with your parent or your coach. That's what it's all about to me. I say do it in a positive, fun, enthusiastic, enriching way, and you can develop a champion that way. That certainly was my goal with the boys, and dadgummit, I think I achieved that. We have a great relationship to this day. I'm going to be having a breakfast with Mikey in a few hours. I haven't seen him for a couple weeks. He's been in Yellowstone, just got back from the U.S. Open. And we love doing things. We'll probably be playing some music together later in the day. We both share a passion for music as well as tennis. But you can do it in a positive way. You can do it in a fun way. And with all the great life lessons learned, that's why I wrote the book, and that's what I think the approach should be for the health and the relationship with the parents and the children.
Gotcha. And the Wayne Bryan Express is rolling down the tracks. So chapter four, pushing the passion button.
Well, I mean, chapter three is a cornerstone. It talks about fun. Cyndi Lauper, girls just want to have fun. I found out boys just want to have fun. Animals just want to have fun. Parents just want to have fun. Everybody wants to have fun. So chapter three is a cornerstone. And also chapter four, you're talking about side door motivation. I have found that there are some coaches and some parents and some mentors that don't have motivational and inspirational skills. Like you say, They go at it from drudgery. They don't understand fun. They're not fun people. They don't smile. They don't laugh. They don't dance. They don't get it. And I say, if you don't, and many don't, you got to come at it through the side door. You want them to be a tennis player? Go take them to see that Cal versus Stanford match, that SC versus UCLA match, Georgia versus LSU, Notre Dame versus Yale, Harvard-Yale, Michigan State, Ohio State. You take them to a college match, they're going to be fired up to play. Any 8, 9, 10-year-old that goes to a college match is going to be hooked on tennis forever. They're going to want to do it. They're going to want to play in college. If we do nothing else in tennis, get kids to college matches. Get them to World Team Tennis matches. Get them to ATP events, WTA events. Take them to the U.S. Open. Take them to Futures. Take them to Challengers. Take them to exhibitions. It's the best thing you can do. Champions, and write this down, listeners, champions take it in through their eyes and not their ears. Champions take it in through their eyes and not their ears. You must see it before you can dream it. You must be passionate about it before you can achieve it. That's huge.
So Wayne, you know, I have to tell you a story because I think the first time I heard you speak was in 1995.
And I hope you said the same thing I just said.
You said the same thing. So I determined that I was going to take my high school tennis team to go to the SAP Open, which I think it was in San Jose at that time already. Anyway,
yes.
So we go to the SAP Open, and I've got 20 guys there, and we're there all day and all night. And a couple great things happened during that trip. Some of my kids snuck into the players' lounge and ate ATP player food, which I didn't know about. Okay? I don't know how they did it. We had two rules that day. One, we're leaving at 9:30 tonight, and so meet us in Section 203 at 9:30, or you're going to have to walk home. And then the other rule is, if you get caught, you don't know me. Those were our rules for the day. All right. So here's the interesting thing, though. It's between the day and the night session, and there's no tennis, and the kids ask me if they can go into downtown San Jose and get some pizza. And I'm thinking, okay, buddy system. So three of them go out and go get some pizza. They come back. The freshman kid is frightened. He's scared. I was like, guys, what happened there? Oh, we were in the pizza place, and some homeless guy comes in, and he says, do you have cupcakes? I want a cupcake. And he was, like, angry, and they thought that he was going to kill him. So what happened? Give me a cupcake became our slogan for the season. Give me a cupcake. I want a cupcake. And I'll tell you, that was we won a league title for the first time in 26 years at that school on the motto, give me a cupcake.
What a great story.
But that story comes from you inspiring me to do that because that's the only way that thing happens. So I just want to underscore that how important those moments are because that's when you'll have – sometimes it's not about the tennis. It's about the what happens on the way and the way back.
My biggest frustration in life, Bill, is going around and finding juniors – and lots of them that have never been to a college match. It just breaks my heart. How can you not go to college tennis? I spoke in Chicago several years ago. It was snowing. I flew in from Palm Springs. I couldn't believe how cold I was. There was 400 coaches in the audience. And I said, let me ask all you coaches, how many of you took your children? How far is Notre Dame away? And they said it's about an hour on around the lake. And I said, how many of you took your students, your players, to watch the NCAAs, which were held at Notre Dame that year. Of the 400 coaches, only four hands went up. It made me mad. I gave them hell. What are you guys doing? You're in the business to grow the sport, inspire the kids, and you don't take them to see the great NCAAs, which is an hour away from Chicago, at Notre Dame? What's wrong with you? And one elderly gentleman to the side said, well, Coach Brian, I didn't want to take my players out of class. And I said, well, let me ask you this. How many D1 college players have you developed in your program over the last decade? And he said, well, I've never had a player. you don't play D1 college tennis. Well, I said, there's your problem. You don't go see college tennis. I've had over 100 D1 college players for one reason and one reason only. I take them to see college tennis. It's the best possible thing we can do. I spoke to a group of coaches in Key Biscayne several years ago, and I said, the best thing you can do is take your kids to college matches, pro matches, go to the U.S. Open. And then an old coach in the back said, Coach Bryant, he stood up, said, I got to tell you, I heard you talk about going to the U.S. Open. Well, I took all my high school players. We raised money all year. I took 25 kids to the U.S. Open. We were there for a late-night match in Arthur Ashe Stadium. We saw your boys play, and they got upset in the third round by a French team. I go, oh, God, thanks for the reminder. He said, no. What is amazing is it was after midnight, and the boys, even though they lost, stayed around and signed autographs. I took my kids all the way from the top of the stadium down to that front row, and all 25 of my kids got an autograph and a word from Mike and Bob Bryan. They'll never forget it. Two of my players on the way out of the stadium at 12:30 at night said, Coach, you know, we've had trouble with our behavior on the court. And the coach says, I know. You're the two worst sports on the team. They said, but after seeing the Bryan brothers take a loss, sign autographs, and act like champions, win or lose, we promise you we will always be good sports on the court. And he said, you know, Coach, they did. Not only were they inspired about tennis, but they were inspired about behavior. All kind of wonderful things happen when you go to events at the top level. You want to be a marine biologist? Go to the Monterey Aquarium. You want to be a country western star? Go watch Taylor Swift or Sheryl Crow or Kenny Chesney.
Okay, got it. We got it.
Shut up, you're saying.
let's try to do this. Let's go through about four chapters really quick. So give me three sentences on each one. All right. Chapter 5, less is more. Let's see if you can do less is more. Here we go.
Well, that's huge. Less is more. I mean, don't get to the kids to their saturation point. If you've got a 4-year-old, they can only concentrate for about a minute or two, you know. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, get off it. Have the piano set up in your living room or the drums. Let them bang and dink around on the instrument just for a couple minutes. They don't want to play for 2 hours. When I first took the boys to see Ojai when they were 5 years old, they didn't want to sit in a stadium and watch an entire match. They just wanted to watch a little bit and then go play with the frogs down in the creek. Their attention span was short. You give them just little doses. Watch their eyes. When they've had enough, go on to the next thing. Same with drills and games, coaches. Don't do a drill for 30 minutes. Do it just for a couple minutes and then do something different. Keep them fired up and engaged at all times. Don't oversaturate. Do it frequently and daily, but watch your doses. That's huge. It's better to a little bit each day than twice a week for hours until you bore them into the ground. Less is more is a very important chapter.
Chapter 6, praise and reinforcement.
Well, that's like breathing to me. You don't always correct and put the child down for their mistakes. Look for what they did well and praise it. There's an old expression, if you must criticize, drop it like a dandelion from a roof. And I say, on second thought, don't even drop a dandelion. Frame everything in the positive. If your child goes out and plays a 12 and under match and they play like a dog, they're choking, they can't get the ball in the court, they perform horribly, don't go up with a yellow legal pad with 33 things that you've written down and say, doggone it, you had a backhand, you should have gone cross court, and you went down the line. Don't say anything. Just if they haven't hit one good shot all day, and that isn't going to ever happen, but you say, man, I love your clothes. I love your body language. I love the way you shook hands, the way you were a great sport. You got to be 100% positive, especially when they lose. I think it's better if you're going to be coaching and improving to phrase it in the positive and do it more after wins. Learn to couch things in positive terms. get where you want to go. Yes, make the correction. Yes, make the improvement. Yes, get the toss out in front of the serve and relax and loose and stick it, but do it in a positive way. And that takes some talent. That sort of takes some retraining. But the greatest teachers and coaches I know are positive. When you think of the great Dick Gould, you're thinking of a positive guy. When you think of Rick Macy or Nick Bollettieri or the great Vic Braden, all of these coaches are positive and motivating and inspirational at all times.
And so that answered Chapter 11, so we can skip that one because you want to find that positive coach. All right, Chapter 7.
Let me just say this about finding the positive coach. Experiment around. Go from program to program. Or if you're taking drums or piano, take a bunch of lessons from different people, and the child will tell you who the best teacher is because they'll have a great relationship. That teacher will give them great information and take them forward, but they'll do it in a positive, fun, enriching way. Let your child be involved in selecting that best coach. And if you're in tennis, and I'm sure most people listening are in tennis in one way or another, also go to programs where there's a lot of good players. If a coach is worth his salt, not only does he have a lot of players, but he has a lot of excellent players, champions that are going forward. Look around your community and find it. And if there is not one of those programs, do it yourself and create one.
Chapter 7, Steps of Progression.
Well, I think that is crucial. That is one thing, as the boys were coming along and throughout my life, I always liked to serve on USTA committees and boards because not only was I serving our sport, but I also learned about what is available. Look, some parents that are coming into tennis, they don't know what sectional rankings are. They don't know what national tournaments are available or what team events are available or junior team tennis. They don't know the best tournaments to play, what a tournament schedule is. They don't know about high school tennis. I say learn the entire pathway as best you can from day one. Talk to experienced coaches, other experienced parents, and learn how do I go from a little three-year-old pushing a ball around in the backyard or hitting a balloon to the U.S. Open. And believe me, that is achievable. It can be done. But you must know each and every step of the way, the better the pathway and the more you know each steps, that'll get you across the country. If you lose your way, you're going to get stuck in the Donner Pass and be snowed in, you know? I think tennis is a little bit like surfing. If you ride that wave perfectly, you can get a long and fast ride. If you get out ahead of the wave, it's going to crash down on you and kill you. If you get behind the wave, you're going to sink down in the calm waters and it's going to be boring. You got to ride that wave just right. Learn the pathway, learn what's available. The USTA has a lot of programs. A private enterprise has a lot of programs. Your local club and park and school has a lot of programs. Know each step to make it the most stimulating and fun for your child. Playing and competing every step of the way, but having a great time and making it social with other kids along the journey.
Okay, we're not going to make it through the whole book at this rate, but that's all right. No, Chapter 8, Going for the Goal.
Well, I'm a big believer in goal setting. I believe in short-term goals and long-term goals. Look, Mike and Bob and all my players used to do it. I had them type up their own goals, put them on the refrigerator, put them on the bathroom mirror, put them in their notebook. I believed in sharing their goals with others. When they were in high school, they made sure every teacher in school knows they were trying to get a full ride to Stanford or SC or UCLA. I need an A in this class. I have a goal of getting straight A's in school so I can go to any college I want and play anywhere I want. Well, they did get straight A's because they set that goal. Here's the thing about Mike and Bob. Every goal they've ever set, short-term and long-term, they have achieved. Did they ever say they want to win the gold medal? That was one of their goals. Do they want to be number one in the world in doubles? That was one of their goals. Do they want to play for Stanford? That was one of their goals. Want to win the NCAAs, win the Davis Cup, win every Grand Slam? Every one of those goals was written down and achieved. Each year before they start on the tour, they have a goal. Last year, and I don't like tournament goals. I don't like saying, we're going to win this particular tournament. That's too hard. Too many things can happen. Somebody can play too hot and too well and beat you. But you can say, I'd like to be ranked in the top 10, the top 50, top 100. I'd like to have a ranking. I'd like to be number one. Last year, they set a goal that I wasn't in agreement with. They said, we want to win Olympic gold. We got the bronze in Beijing, and it bugged us. We were the number one seeds. We should have won. We're going to win the gold medal. We're going to set our whole schedule. I said, guys, that's too tough to do. No, we're going to win the gold medal. Well, dadgummit, they did it. Everything was pointing in that direction. So goal setting is huge. I wrote a whole chapter on it, how you go about setting goals and monitoring goals. And I just think goals are crucial to kids. If you don't have a goal, you may or may not achieve your goal, but if you don't have it, you certainly won't achieve it. I'm also a big believer in setting achievable goals. Help your child focus. If they're ranked number 200, they can't say, well, next year I'm going to be number one. That's an unrealistic goal. But maybe by analyzing it, who's going to be returning and what they can work on in their game and how they can improve and how they can step up their practices and step up their tournament schedule, they could, in fact, go from number 200 to number 75. That would be realistic. But you always got to help your children with their goals. But it's got to be their goals and what they want to achieve, and that is crucial. But there's a whole chapter. I could talk about it for an hour. By the way, each one of these chapters is a one-hour speech I've given, and you're asking me to knock it out in a minute. I'm doing the best I can. Thanks for your patience, Bill.
It's okay, because you know, if everything went according to plan, then there'd be no need for leadership. So,
and it wouldn't be Wayne Bryan. And by the way, they can get the book quickly at Tennis Warehouse. They have an attractive price, and Tennis Warehouse book section will spit that book out to you really quick. And it's easily priced. If you can't afford it, let me know, and I'll send you one for free. Just like I tell kids that can't afford to go to a college match, don't worry, because it's free.
There you go. So now I'm going to start kind of skipping around to different chapters, and I want to preface this next one with the idea that I have a question that comes with it. So for chapter 10, there's a guy, Mark, and he is the mayor of Tennisopolis, which is a place for people to find other people to play, mainly at public places, and they have, like, you know, 45,000 members or something like that.
I love it.
Mark asks this question. He says, "Hi, Wayne. My 11-year-old son plays tennis, and he has been since he was 7. His strokes are nice, but he struggled in close matches. Because of this, he seems to have lost interest in playing competitively. It seems he would prefer not to play than to play and lose. Did you ever have this issue with your boys, and is this something he can overcome? Right now he enjoys playing middle school tennis and USTA junior team tennis, but does not like tournaments. What's your advice?" So this is chapter 10, play first, learn later.
Well, let me say this. You can do tennis in lots of ways. Some people want to be ultra-competitive and go for the goal. They want to play at Stanford or Cal or UCLA or Georgia or Tennessee. They want to play on the tour. They're going full bore, and that's fine, and I love that. But other kids like the team aspect of tennis, and that's fine too. And there's some people that people at my club, they did not like to play a round robin, a tournament. They didn't even want to have a social doubles match. They only wanted to go out and hit balls back and forth for exercise. And let me say this, that's fine. I have zero problem with that. Tennis can be done in all kind of ways. So that's fine. Now, if he feels, to be speak specifically to this, that his child really would down deep like to compete, but they're having trouble competing, I'd like to answer that. But again, if the child just only likes the team effort, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just fine. But let's say this parent feels the child deep down does want to be a competitor. I always say a junkyard dog does not come out of the womb a junkyard dog. They come out as a cute little puppy. You throw that little cute little puppy out in the junkyard where they got to live and fight and scrap to stay alive, they will become a junkyard dog and tough as nails, no question about it. I do believe you can create competitors, tough competitors, with how you bring them along, A, in practice, and B, with the tournaments. If you overwhelm the child and they're getting in the wrong division, getting beat, 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 there's very few kids that'll slug it out and stay in there. I like to have them win 2 out of 3 matches, get on the right level of play, and have a lot of winning and losing in practice. My friends at the USTA say, hey, I don't want to, this is not a political talk, but they say, if the kids don't want to play green balls in the 10s, no problem. Have them go up and play the 12s. Well, I think that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's the worst time of your life to play up. The hook is not set firmly in the mouth. The kids are not tough competitors. And we're telling them to go up and play against kids that are 3 years older. Those kids will take advantage of them. They have physical size, mental advantages, all kind of things. I don't agree with that. I say, in practice, and my whole philosophy in bringing people along is gradually, with the challenge out in front, not an overwhelming challenge, but an achievable challenge that they can get to by grasping and reaching and striving. Every day in practice, we had a lot of drills and games. I had points on every drill and game. You win this little 5-minute game to 11, you go forward a court. You lose, you go down a court. You win, I call you a winner. You lose, I call you a loser. We had to get next to losing. We had to embrace losing, understand losing, see that losing is not so bad. The more the children win and lose in short samples frequently, the better they are able to cope with it. If this youngster that your friend has was under my roof, I'd have him winning and losing in practice frequently. He'd play a lot of tournaments, but at the right level, a level that he can succeed in, not get overwhelmed. Every junior circuit has tournaments that are tougher and lesser. Scheduling helps create junkyard dogs. It's, again, the surfing analogy. I think this little junior is out in front of the wave, and the wave is crashing down on him, and he doesn't want to surf anymore. He needs to get right in the pocket of that wave and surf it perfectly. So I would tweak his schedule and do a better job with his schedule. I would do a better job with him in practice. I would have him play kids that are right at his level or just a little bit below his level. So you got to really get in there and, quote-unquote, compete against yourself. I could talk about this for hours. I'd be happy to talk personally with this dad and help him with this. But, again, if a child doesn't want to compete, I got no problem with that. If they want to just sit with their mom and dad on the weekend, that's fine, too. If they only want to play on the 4th of July, that's fine. But if it's because the schedule isn't right or the practice isn't right, then I'd like to see that adjusted and improved. And, again, I could talk about it for an hour, but I'll try to wind it up and go into the next chapter or whatever you want to talk about, Bill.
Let me interject something, too, because I started doing that thing with the moving people up and moving people down as part of my high school practices. And this was very helpful to my number one player, who was kind of an underachiever, and he slacked off at times. And it was fun to see him on court 3. And to have been beaten by the number 11 player who's now playing on court 1. And then to say, and then to say, hey, buddy, look where you are and look where he is. And then to watch him get motivated to actually play the game right. Yeah, it was very powerful for him because he realized he shouldn't leave anything on the table. All right.
And I wrote a long email yesterday, and I reminded some of the people I was writing to, the essence of tennis is competition, competing.
Yeah.
That's what makes players great. That's what's exciting, keeping score. Otherwise, let's call it dance or music. You don't really keep score. But tennis is about winning and losing and keeping score. So we can't dumb it down and forget that the core is competition. Yes, you make it fun. Yes, you have enthusiasm. Yes, you're positive. But at the again, the center of it is winning and losing and competing, and you must have that in your soul, but it can be improved upon by being in this great sport and doing it in a positive way. But let's don't forget, and let's don't get rid of 10 and under rankings. You can improve and develop and compete at the same time. You can play piano and drums to get better and to develop, but at the same time you can strive for winning the talent show in kindergarten. So to say that 10 and under tennis is only for development, again, is missing it to me. All the players I work with, they ate nails for breakfast, and they wanted to ball and practice and get ready for that upcoming tournament, and that's what drove them. And rankings drove them. Trophies drove them. And you know something? Mike and Bob Bryant at age 35, winning titles still drives them, and getting that number one ranking drives them now just like it did when they were 6 years old. To get rid of rankings is missing the mark. Tennis is competitive. Sure, it's fun. Sure, there's life lessons. 100% agree. But it's also competition. Did you say stop, Bill?
Man, I got in the way of the Wayne Bryan Express there for a second. All right, chapter 17.
How dare you?
A secondary passion. And then I have another Plato quote, because this is our other guest. Plato's on the show today. Musical training is a more potent instrument than any other because rhythm and harmony find their way into the inward places of the soul on which they might, on which they mightily fasten imparting grace. So
I absolutely love that quote, and I'm glad it's from Plato, maybe the greatest philosopher of all time, because I do feel that part of Mike and Bob's success as tennis players is because of their music. I mean, Bob is an unbelievable keyboard player and a keyboard bass player. Mike is a great lead guitar player and a stunning drummer. They play all the time. They play gigs all over the world. They play with some of the best musicians. Their band is red hot with Jim Bogios of the Counting Crows and Michael Johns of American Idol. We're going to be playing a gig together on September 27th. They do a lot of gigs for charity. But I think the rhythm and the timing that they developed in their music really applied to the tennis. You watch them play, they're doing a dance out there. There's a lot of rhythm in the points, and there's a lot of rhythm in between points. Watch him sitting down on the changeover. You're going to see rhythm. Watch him run out to position. You're going to see rhythm and coordination and timing. They're also very good dancers. But I think that musical aspect of tennis is huge. Hey, you're out there in a public park, and you're having a little drill or a little workout. Flip a little music on from time to time. That music works well with tennis. In team tennis, I coached the Sacramento Capitals for 12 years. We have music in between every game and sometimes in between points, and people like it. Musicians want to be tennis players. Tennis players want to be musicians. I think it works together. Some of Mike and Bob's best friends are not only tennis players, but some of their best friends are some of the greatest musicians in the world. James Valentine of Maroon 5 is a great pal. Jim Bogios of the Counting Crows, Michael John, Elton John, so many great musicians. Music and tennis work together. I love that quote from Plato. I hope you'll send it to me because I collect quotes from people far and wide through the years.
It's on its way. So let me, you spurred me on to something. Okay, recently there was a dispute of the idea of specific learning styles that people have, because the research shows that people operate in different learning styles at different times. But so now there's kind of a shift into the idea of learning modalities, you know. So you have your visual, your kinesthetic, but then you also have your musical, rhythmical. And I noticed that sometimes as a school teacher and as a tennis coach that if all of a sudden I start to speak with a different rhythm to the way I'm talking, now all of a sudden that kid can hear me because they're in that modality. So I think there's a lot of truth to that, and people should pay attention to the rhythm in which they speak, changing it up, making it more interesting, and kind of being a little more Jimi Hendrix in their way of presenting what they do. So
well, let me say this. I 100% agree with that. Every child learns it in different ways throughout their life and at any one time. You, as a coach, must graft with that player and find out what works for them. Quite often I ask the player, what does this feel like to you? Don't tell me what I want to hear. What does it feel like to hit the backhand volley, Bob, that way? I like this Ellis Ferreira look on the backhand volley, separated, feeling the shoulder blade. And he had it one day and I said, Bob, that's it. What does that feel like to you? He said, it feels like I'm finishing high. So I go, perfect. That's what it always works for him. What you say to one player is not what you say to another player. For Mike, we always said, his mom always said, happy racehorse, quick, upbeat, head up, all these kind of things. But I could talk about that particular topic that you just raised for the rest of the weekend. That is the essence of it. People thought Vince Lombardi, the great coach of the Packers, was a hard ass and only taught one way. He treated every player different. I treat every single player different because they are different emotionally, intellectually, different athletic talents and skills, some like visual, some like explanation, some like demonstration, some like there's all kind of ways. And the master coach knows this in their guts. The greatest coaches I know teach everybody different. You got your same discipline and your same structure, your same theme, but you must have variation because everybody's different.
Okay, Wayne, so actually, yeah, the full weekend show is called 5150, but I don't think you want to sign up for that. All right. Now, Chapter 19, Become Involved and Volunteer, and here we have Plato on the show again, and he said one of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. So talk about... Now, and here's what I really want you to get into. I want you to get into leadership, taking charge, guiding things the way that's sensible and the best for the kids. So what do you have to say about that? And this is what we're going to be pretty much wrapping up the show on this. So we have about six minutes and change here.
Well, look, I 100% think if you're in soccer, become involved in the administration of soccer for your local juniors. If you're in baseball, the same. If you're in music, help music grow in your area. Raise money for the band. And so, if you're in tennis, get involved in USTA committees. Get involved in USPTA, USPTR, in pro tennis. Help the sport in every way you can with the governing bodies. By the same token, if you see problem areas and things that aren't right for the sport, speak out. Tell the truth. Speak truth to power. I'm not going to say anything, but one of the top officials, maybe the CEO, maybe the new president, wanted to give me a wonderful award. I wasn't able to accept it last year because I was doing an event in Montgomery, Alabama called the Blue Gray College Classic. By the same token, there was a massive USTA meeting in New York, and one of the leading staff members hung me out to dry, hung me out to critic. Well, this Wayne Bryan is not good for our sport, and blah, blah, blah. didn't appreciate it, and I got a lot of arrows in my back from the USTA because I think that they're going in the wrong direction in many ways, and I'm going to stand up and say it, take the hits, but I got to do what I feel is best for the sport. I got to be honest. I got to share my experiences. I've got to tell the truth and not be afraid to speak truth to power and have my name brought up in a meeting for derision, and that's fine. I'm going to continue to do it. It doesn't bother me one bit. But the point is, serve on committees, speak out, help the sport, help the kids. Every player that you create in America, you're creating a better citizen. Every kid you help along the way, you're giving them a better life, be it music, golf, dance, theater. Take the time to help juniors along the way. Give them a pat on the back. If nothing else, give them some encouragement. Help them spend some money and get them to the Nationals if that's what they need. Get them a few lessons. Buy them a local club membership. Say, how can I help you? I believe in your quest. I'm behind you all the way. I love the kids. I'm in touch with so many of them across the country at the beginning level, at the junior level, at the top level, at the intercollegiate level, at the pro level. I admire people in this sport. I'll help them any way I can. I think tennis is the absolute best sport you can play. I also love music, but I recognize there's other great disciplines, and I'm behind those too. But I'm for kids striving to be champions, striving to be the best they can be. They'll have a better life. They'll have a more successful life. They'll have a happier life, and we'll have a better country. Am I afraid to speak out? No. But help the USTA and help the various governing bodies. I'm 100% behind those people. They're good people, and this is the best sport you can play.
So I have one more question because I would be remiss if I didn't ask the question from Ethan in Castro Valley, California. He's a high school freshman, and he hopes to do well on his high school team, which is coming up, especially in doubles. So he wants to know how he can become a very effective volleyer.
I could talk about the volley for hours. I love the fact that Ethan wants to play on his high school team. High school tennis is a blast. You get to know the players. It's exciting. You're playing for your school. What could be better than playing high school tennis? To be a better volleyer, go on YouTube and get some video of Mike and Bob Bryan volleying. Tell Ethan to send me his address, and I'll send him my little DVD, Coach Bryan on Doubles. I have a lot of fabulous volley drills that Mike and Bob and I have done since they were little boys, and many that we still do as pros. I'll send that to him right away. Look at the best volleyers in the world. Look at their technique. The better equipment you have to volley with, the better volleyer you'll be. Get up close and get the feeling of the volley. On that backhand volley, get a continental grip. Get it out in front. Separate the shoulder blades. Don't let that racket drip. Keep the ball out in front. Keep it forward. Strike it solid. Have good posture and balance. Hit lots of volleys in practice. Drill it. Work on it. Doubles is a great thing, and if you want to be a great doubles player, without a doubt, the volley is the key. Serves are important in singles and doubles. Ground strokes are important in singles and doubles. Returns are important in singles and doubles. But to be a great doubles player, you got to have a great volley. If you want to go to the underworld sea world of Jacques Cousteau, you got to be able to scuba dive. You want to be a doubles player, you got to be able to volley. You got to have a great first serve, great return, good lob, good overhead, and good communication with your partner. Send me his address. I'll send him that DVD.
Okay, great. Well, so now let's summarize this. And, you know, I've been promoting this particular show as an important show for everyone in America who cares about American tennis and wants to see it, you know, get back to the top. You know, Would you agree that if people follow these principles and tap into that passion of the kids, that that's the way?
Without a doubt. I mean, I say this to my friends, my overpaid friends on the USTA staff. It's fine to think globally. It's fine to think nationally.